Good afternoon, honorable members.
Afternoon, Chair.
Afternoon, Chair. Hey, you're back. Welcome back. It's long time, man.
Clute, can you remove your background?
Okay. Hello, Mama.
Likai, Manesu.
Mkwane, Malikai.
Awarite, ni.
Nangu, Mudimare, Buluki.
Loli.
Loli, can we start with the meeting? Loli.
Good morning, Chairperson.
Can we start with the meeting?
Afternoon, Loli.
Good afternoon, ma'am. Good afternoon. I'm sorry for that. Yes, Chairperson, we can start. I'm sorry for the mishap. But ICC was able to help me on time. I'm sorry for people that are waiting. The apologies that we have, Chairperson, we have one from the minister, the deputy minister, and the and honourable Labuskagne and honourable Makausi. Thank you.
Thank you very much,
Chair.
Yes, Honorable Nana.
Honorable Smith has also submitted an apology.
Oh, okay. No, it has been noted. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. I know Honorable Arnold logged in very early. I was surprised. When I was struggling to log in, I can see he's also not in. I said to Loli, you know, there are people who log in at 11:30, 30 minutes before, yeah. And if they are not logging in, I see I've got trouble now. My meeting might collapse.
Yes, definitely.
But thanks to the IT for having assisted us on time, that at least by 12 o'clock we are ready for us to start the meeting. Let me take this opportunity to welcome honorable members into our meeting. We also want to take this opportunity to welcome the delegation from DINEL that is also part of our meeting together with the staff. We are going to allow the presentation to be done, and then we allow members to engage with the presentation. We are handing over to DINEL to deal with the presentation.
Thank you, Chair.
You can introduce your delegation.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. My name is Talib Sadiq, and I'm the Interim Group CEO at DINEL. I'm joined by Mr. Jan Patrick Hellman. He is the CEO of Rheinmetall DINEL Munitions, and he has his team with him as well. I'm also joined by Mr. Temba Zwelibanzi, who is our head of compliance and safety at DINEL Group. That's our team, Chair.
Okay. Now we are handing over to you to do the presentation to the committee. Then we'll engage with the presentation after. You are welcome.
Thank you, Chair, and good day to you and to members of the committee. We'd like to thank you for inviting Rheinmetall DINEL Munitions to provide you with an update of the safety conditions at our Somerset West plant following the incident. the tragic incident.
Excuse me, Mr. Talib.
Yes, yes.
Chair. I'd like to check if you want us to share the screen or you'll be able to share it.
Yeah, we will share the screen.
Let me give you the right.
If you can give it to Jan, please. Jan Patrick.
Jan Patrick.
Yes.
Let me check his name. Did he join the meeting? Oh, yes, I can see.
Yes. So, Chair, I'll just make some opening comments and then hand over to Jan. The incident that took place on the 3rd of September 2018 was deeply felt across the Denel Group, and our board chair, Ms. Monsla Schlossler, conveyed our condolences and support to the families of the employees who lost their lives, and also to Rheinmetall Denel's Munition, the company, and its employees. The support that Denel is a shareholder in RDM. We own 49%, and Rheinmetall Denel Munitions is 51% of the shares are held by a German company called Rheinmetall Waff Munitions. And the relationship has evolved into a solid partnership over the many years that we've now entered into the partnership. Rheinmetall, as you may be aware, Rheinmetall Denel Munitions Chair is the official and primary munition supplier for our country, to our country's protection forces, including the SANDF and the South African Police Services. The company does make a significant contribution as well to our economy. We generate over 90% of our revenue in export markets. We have a positive impact on job creation. And we're also committed to skills development and training with a strong focus on empowerment. Chair, the defense and explosive sector in which we operate is one of the most regulated sectors, especially from a safety point of view. And we make sure that our behavior reflects our compliance to these regulations. So over the years, Rheinmetall Denel Munitions, we have invested heavily into safety and related procedures, especially to world standards, because the bulk of our revenue is export related. And with the incident taking place, Rheinmetall Denel Munitions and the broader Denel Group, we have further reviewed our processes and systems to ensure we comply with a number of international standards, including occupational health and safety, environmental management, and quality management. As the CEO, Mr. Jan-Patrick Hellman, will make a presentation, Rheinmetall Denel Munitions has all these processes in place, and the company has done a lot to ensure that incident that took place is preventable going forward and also at the time. Rheinmetall Denel Munitions aims to be a reliable, responsible, and globally reputable company. And we take safety very serious across all our stakeholders, including our employees and our customers who use our products. I would now like to hand over to Jan Patrick to further the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Jan.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Chairperson. Good afternoon, honorable members. Thank you, Talib, for handing over. My name is Jan-Patrick Hansen. I'm the CEO of Rheinmetall Denel Ammunition, introduced by Talib. And thank you for giving us the opportunity to present to your select committee on public enterprise. I think we have a good relationship because our shareholder, Denel, as you as a shareholder, so we have a direct, indirect linkage to you. And before we start, Chair, please allow me to introduce my team. And this team is fitted to the topic, and the topic is safety today. So in safety of the working conditions of workers, I would like to expand this. It's safety conditions for all of us, yeah, for all employees of RDM. And our team, like we present you for you today, that's me, the CEO, It's Mr. Louis Erasmus on my left side as a COO of the company, the General Manager of Human Resources, Duduzil Letzeli, the General Manager of Product Development, and today he's here in his on his job as a head of the investigation of the incident in 2018, Mr. Rod Kayser. Donny Naker is here. He is the head of site of the Somerset West Site, where we are at the moment. Also, our headquarter is here in Western Cape in Somerset West. We have Linde Metcalf here. He is the executive manager for operational risk management. This is the key. He's a key person on the topic of safety when we talk about safety. Ruby Marie as public relations, and we have one operator here, Vandil Vani. He's working here in Somerset West, and he is, let me say, he is the son of RDM, because the joint venture between Rheinmetall and Denel was founded in 2008, 2009, and this is when Vandil started his job here with Rheinmetall Denel. So Chair and honorable members, this is a team. I will explain you why we are here in the team, because safety is the most important thing. And my target, and it's very important, my target for today is to show you and to convince you as the members of the committee that safety is a core of our business, ammunition business. Safety is a 360 degree responsibility. So that means safety is everybody's task. So from the CEO to the operator, everyone is responsible for safety. I structured my presentation in 4 points. The first one, members and chair and members, I want to guide you through the company, our company information about Rheinmetall Denel Ammunition, the shareholding structure, and our business in explosives. This is important to understand. The number two, I would like to outline the strictly regulated explosives business of ammunition. This is unique because we don't sell Coca-Cola, we sell safety, we sell security products, we sell ammunition. The third point, I would like to present you the outcome of the RDM's investigation of the incident in 2018. And I would like to conclude with a 4 point. Duduzil Letzeli will do this. How we as a RDM family, this is how we call us in South Africa, handle social responsibility, focus on the families of the dedicated colleagues we lost in 2018. A little bit wider, our communities nearby on all sides, especially in Somerset West, Makassar, and South Africa in general, so our social responsibility. So this is how I structured the presentation. Please, slide number one. Are we doing this? Okay, can you switch on slide number one? Okay. Okay. Can you see slide number, the first slide, number two?
It's not yet showing.
All right. Maybe it takes some time from Western Cape to Pretoria. Sometimes it's... But you see our first slide, right? Presentation to the select committee.
No, we don't.
Oh, you don't see anything?
We don't see. We just...
Mr. Lang can see it. Hello? Hello?
Lonely, can you share the slide?
Yeah, I wanted to check if I can't assist in sharing the screen.
Okay, this would be perfect.
Okay, let me... Okay.
Thank you very much. Why are we not able to do this?
please bear with me?
No, sorry, from our side.
Is this the one?
Yes, exactly. Thank you very much. Can you go on the next slide, please? Slide number 2.
Hey, why can't I move now? Is this number 2?
That's number 1.
No, this is number 1.
Okay.
This is the next one.
Number 2? Which number is this?
All right.
Number 2, yes.
Number 2. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, no.
There's no number 3.
Okay. JP, can you stop doing something there? She shares a presentation.
See the presentation.
Jan, you can continue. We're on slide 2.
Okay, I can't see anything at the moment. Do you see the presentation?
Speak to what you have, as long as you know it's slide 2.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much, chairperson. So on slide number 2, you see on the left side our shareholding situation. And you see in general that the South African Munition Supply is RDM to the FIS. We have two big legs. The first one is our local...
Slowly, it means it's slide number 3, this one. Go back to slide 2.
This is number 3.
Yeah, it's
three. I can't see numbers here.
They are up there.
Oh.
Just go back.
Did I go back? No.
No, no.
Hey.
On the top, there is an arrow to the...
This is number 2. Oh, it's number 4.
So this is number 4. Oh,
number 2.
Oh, thank you very much. All right. So you see, we as RDM, as Talib already stated, this are the ammunition supplier to the SINDF with two strong legs. The first one is the local footprint, and the second one is the export leg we have. So, and I want to guide you through this. On the left side, you see our shareholding structure. And as stated by Talib Sadiq, as a shareholder, the minor shareholder with 49% Denel on the one hand. On the other hand, Rheinmetall is a majority with 51%. I would like to give you one or two sentences relating to Rheinmetall. Rheinmetall is a German-based technology company with two legs. One thing is an automotive supplier, the motive business, and the second one is a defense system house. And Rheinmetall is a system house similar to Denel, with a system approach of vehicles, like a vehicle system, of electronic systems, and the third one is weapons and ammunition. So these are the three pillars of Rheinmetall, and Rheinmetall is operational worldwide with more than 140 sites, companies, locations worldwide. 140. This is important. I come to this later for us here in South Africa. The sales from Rheinmetall, and then you see the size a bit, from the business year 2019, where 100 billion in sales turnover, 100 billion rent, and with 8 billion rent in profit, EBIT margin, and in total, Rheinmetall has 30,000 people. So this is in a nutshell Rheinmetall, and I don't want to go more into detail, but I think there was a quote some years ago from the New York Times, and they compared all the defense industries worldwide, and they said that Rheinmetall is like the Porsche of the defense companies worldwide. So Rheinmetall is not big as the big player, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, but they have leading edge technology, like Porsche probably also have. So I think this is a good description. And our board is absolutely business driven. The majority is from Rheinmetall, and the chairman of the board, Mr. Armin Pappberger, is also the CEO of the Rheinmetall Group. So you see that the RDM plays a significant role in Rheinmetall, our majority shareholder, 51%. I needn't to say anything about Denel. You are familiar with Denel. Your minister is a shareholder of Denel. On the right side, you see the RDM and our site here in South Africa. And we call it, we are a product of South Africa with 100% local production. And this is clear and this is true. So we produce all our products here in South Africa, mainly in these four pillars and in these four sites. I won't say anything about Lengsdale. You see on the left there, this is a joint venture where RDM has a part on. The sites Wellington and Somerset West are in the southern part, here in Western Cape, nearby Cape Town. We produce explosives, energetic materials in Somerset West, where the headquarters is located. We are in Somerset West. We produce propellant, ball powder, and rocket and missiles. This is important for later on when I give you an impression where we have a linkage with Denel from a business perspective. In the north, in Gauteng, we have one site in Boksburg, a forge. This is also the only site that we have where we don't handle explosives. Otherwise, we handle explosives in all our sites. And in the north, in Boskop, in nearby Potchstrom, we have our one of the second biggest site where we do the loading, assembly, and the filling of the ammunition. So in a nutshell, we are 100% local production here in South Africa, roughly 2,000 people, and which is also quite significant. Yeah. Our supply chain is based here in South Africa. So 92% of our supply chain comes from South Africa. The other 8% is mainly international, it's explosives from other countries, but 92% of our supply chain comes from South Africa and roughly 1,500 companies. our supplier base. Please, next slide, slide number 3. Thank you. Chairperson, honorable members, you see here our business situation 2020, and most important, you see the last 10 years. And we can proudly say that this is a success story. The success story based on export. And in, as I said, in 2009, the joint venture between German Rheinmetall and South African Danel was founded here in South Africa. And from this to now, the annual turnovers tripled. And you see this in the figures. I don't have it in. In the first year in 2009 and 10, figures were similar. We talk about 900 million in turnover in sales. In 2017, we talk about 2.8, so nearly 3 billion in sales. And the reason why we have this success story is easy, it's export. The domestic market is too small. The SANDF and the South African police demand is not enough to feed this company. So we need the export. And you see this in this magnificent export quote that we have. You can compare this with 2010, 59%, to 2020, to this current year, where we talk about nearly 93% of export. So it is a clear export lag from our side. And a clear message, this company can't survive without export. We benefit in this export story from Rheinmetall, as I said, and Rheinmetall was the door opener in 2009 for the export market. And we as RDM, a small company in the whole Rheinmetall group, we can benefit from these. We benefit because Rheinmetall has home markets all over the world. I only stated Australia, Europe, it's the Netherlands, it's Hungary. These are home markets where Rheinmetall has big capabilities, big facilities, so we can participate there. And this is for us really good because we are able to invest these foreign currency, dollar and euro in South Africa. And you see the numbers on the bottom. I guide you quickly through. For example, in the last 10 years, we were able to invest, and this is also related to safety, invest more than 1 billion in infrastructure, capital investment. Maintenance is not included, so we could double this if we take maintenance also in. So 1 billion in that we invested in the 4 sites here in South Africa. The second thing you see, we invested nearly 1.5 billion in technology, in product development. This is important because we want to be a successful company also in 7 years, in 8 years, in 9 years. And therefore, we need good products and we need stable products, not only now, we need it in 7 or 8 or 9 years. So we invest a lot of money in our product development. We invest, you see, additional 200 and 100 million in training bursaries. You see this later in detail when we look at our BBE actions. We invest also in the skill development. And on the right side is only for information, our third party income tax, more than 400 million. And if you also look into the figures of the through payee of our employee salary, we talk about roughly a billion in tax. So what we can invest here in South Africa, I think, is quite significant for such a small company like we are. You see, and I want to give you two messages also on this side. Rheinmetall, as you see in the development, is essential for the survival, especially in the year 2019. You see there's a huge impact in 19. In 2018, you see that the success story was not proceeding. The reason was, on the one hand, the incident that we had because we stopped the production in the last quarter of 2018. In 19, you see a dip because of the missing export permits. This seems to be resolved, and so that we can ramp up from 2020 beginning this year. In this time, and Corona, yeah, Corona was also a topic. In this time, financial-wise, we were secured by our shareholder Rheinmetall, and this brought us in a position that during all this period, especially Corona time, we were able to pay all our employees. So we paid 100% the whole year, also during lockdown level 5. And this was not a good time for RDM and the whole South African defense industry. We were not labeled as an essential service. So that means we had to close the whole manufacturing. We had to close the sites in South Africa, and everyone was at home, like most of the people in South Africa, which was good from a fight against Corona perspective, but not good for us. But Rheinmetall helped us with loans, quite significant number of loans, and we paid all our employees. We were also able to pay our suppliers. This is important for the business, because if you don't pay your suppliers, they will go away, and then you have really big problems for your production. So this was also a good thing. And we were able in 2020, after the lockdown, to run our full production in 3 shifts, 24 hours. So we are running and running because we are fully booked. So we have a good and filled order backlog. So therefore, I'm really optimistic, and we will have a good future with our ammunition products. One thing regarding Corona, before I go to the next slide, Corona impacted also our sites in South Africa, and like you could realize it at the beginning, in Western Cape, the numbers were significant high, was also in our site. In total, we had 84 cases in our Rheinmetall Denel ammunition, 84 in total, with a recovery rate nearly by 100%. Today we have 3 cases, but we expect that after the quarantine or isolation, these 3 employees will come back next week and the week after. So I would like to guide you now to the product portfolio, so that you please next slide. Thank you. This is our product portfolio. It's important to understand this. So, the first message is, in all our products, nearly all our products, we have explosives. This is why safety is such an important thing for us. We only have one product where we don't have explosives. This is our hand sanitizer. During lockdown, when we were not allowed to produce, our clever marketing sales team and development guys, they switched off and they switched around and decided to produce hand sanitizers in our vessels. So we have a new product where we can that we can provide to our partners, to our communities, our own employees. So this is the only product where we don't have any explosives in. We have a complex product portfolio, and I tried to cluster this for you, so that is simple, so that you can understand this. In a nutshell, as I said, in every product we produce, we have explosives. So you could say that we are a chemical company here in South Africa. In essence, if you look in ammunition, in essence, to simplify, you have 3 main things in ammunition. It doesn't matter if we talk about a missile, if we talk about small caliber, if we talk about medium, you will have always, and this is the most important thing, an effect, an explosive in it, because you want to have an effect with your ammunition. We call it lethality. On the other hand, you need to pack it somehow. So you need a shell, you need a cartridge, something. It's the second thing. And then you have to bring it from A to B. So that means to transport it to A to B, you need some kind of a propulsion. And this is roughly, in a nutshell, related to all ammunitions, missiles, Atoli, Morta. All our products have this. And to cluster this a bit, you see there is a column with direct fire. This we provide for the Army and the SANDF here in South Africa and worldwide. We and the Navy. The infantry is for the soldiers and for the police, 40 millimeter in hand weapons. The third pillar, air launched. This is important from two directions. The first one is this, the Air Force is our customer, aircraft bombs and missiles. And in this perspective, Denel is our customer. So every time when you talk about a missile from Denel Dynamics, 50% of this missile of Denel Dynamics is produced here in South Africa, here in Somerset West from RDM. So we provide Denel with a rocket motor and with a warhead. What Denel is doing, they have the design and they have the brain, so the sensors, so that the missile knows where to go. On the right side, the right column is the so-called indirect fire. We are famous for this. We are market leader in indirect fire and especially in artillery. I come to this on the next slide. The blue fields are on the left side energetic materials. So we provide also explosives to the mining industry and energetics materials. Explosives are the baseline for all our products on the one hand. And you see on the bottom, we have plant engineering. So we have an industrial engineering capability where we can build up whole facilities worldwide. So we can enable customers and can be partner of customers and they can provide industrial solutions. Next slide, please. Thank you very much. A short information about the market and the future of the RDM. I'm really optimistic. We have a good product portfolio with high sophisticated technology, where is a market demand in the whole world. You see it on the left side. This is an only example. So we talk about a growing market in our core products. We have good products on the right side. And based on our import and export ratio, yeah, we have to compete with all international companies worldwide. Our competitors are from Europe, are from United States, and are from Asia. And I can tell you a little bit proud as well that we are at the forefront of this technology at the moment. But as I said, we have to invest in new technology so that we can have this position also in 7, 8 or in 9 years. So we have a good product portfolio. We invest in South Africa for the next generation of products. That means for the next generation of employees, when we are all here in retirement probably. So therefore, we must invest in skills, in education for our people. So because we need motivated and good educated people for our specific business, ammunition and explosives business. Yeah, this is our business environment. Customers are only government. So our customers are only government. We don't sell to private persons instead of hand sanitizer. But the governments are our customers. This is a strictly regulated business field, as you are aware. Arms control, end user certificates are the buzzwords. And there is a strictly regulated network with whom we can make business, and we are in close collaboration with the government here in South Africa, with the NCACC and the DCAC. So all in all, I think that we can increase the company turnover in the next year because of the market environment and our very good product portfolio. So, and therefore I would like to go to the next slide, where we go more into detail in our daily work. And there's one buzzword for our daily work, it's safety. Safety at work. This is the most important thing. The safety of our people is our most important task. And our people are our most important value most important good. So therefore, safety is the 360-degree approach. And as I said, with our business in defense, which is strictly regulated, our explosive manufacturing is also really strictly regulated worldwide, not only in South Africa, also worldwide. And I would like to guide you through. You see on the left side the national legislation, the South African legislation. And all in all, we have a hierarchy of this legislation. It starts with the UN, with the WHO. It goes then into South Africa, like in many cases, the constitution of South Africa. And then we go into the OSH Act, the Occupational Health and Safety Act, you see on the left side. This is, let me say, our Bible. This is where everything is regulated, where the DOL is the custodian, right? And where we all are working in the explosive environment must be compliant to. We have in total more than 144 of these regulations. And the main objective of the OSH Act and all the regulations is to prevent and avoid work-related injuries. As I said, safety. This is the most important thing. Coming from these regulations, we have to be compliant as a company in the explosive environment. And you see this on the right side. So we need clear licenses and permits as a company. And these things are always based on the legislation. I will come to this later. The main message is here that we have a close network of law, of regulations, in this explosive environment, really, really close and controlled. And up to date, when you look probably in the last slide, the National Disaster Act and the COVID procedure, this is one example. It's a new procedure, COVID-19, started in March, and we had to check as an employer if all these regulations from COVID can come into our system. For example, the masks that we wear, also here you see in the room, yeah, the mask that we wear, are these masks allowed to wear in the explosive area? Because all employees must work special clothes in the explosive area. So all these small things must be highlighted, must be compliant with. So that means regular compliance audits and inspections, like you see from the Department of Labor. We have an in-house safety team, the so-called SHEEP team, Safety House Environment team. We talk about roughly 100-120 people in the whole company, which are focused 24/7 on safety. Okay, so next slide, please. Thank you. As I said, the act is administered by the Department of Labor and Education. We have a close relationship to the DOL, and you see on the left side the areas of interaction with the Department of Labor. So if we talk about licenses for applications for our buildings, yeah, it must be approved by the Department of Labor. The Department of Labor, we come to this later specifically, comes to us on an annual basis, on an ad hoc basis, and have audits. We share with them all, not share, we are the obligation, all investigations we have, all improvements that we want to have. We must do it in a bilateral. And when I say we must do it, then must is the wrong word. We can do it. And it's good to have this in a partnership. And the partnership on the right side is clear defined in a legal appointment in RDM. And the first legal appointed person in the company is always the CEO. Based on the OSH Act Section 61, I'm responsible as the CEO of RDM for all these for all these safety regulations. I'm not alone in this company, right? So therefore you see like a hierarchy that everyone, but with clear accountability, that more people in all levels of the RDM have their responsibility. Like our head of site, he's responsible for his site. So we have four sites. Every head of site is responsible for his own site. Then you see on the third line, I see that there is a typo. It's not GRM, it's GMR. This is a general machinery regulation. And this is a good example. The general machinery regulation, as one example, defines that a machine is safety, is safety so that a worker and operator can use it. That means the operator must be trained. He must have the skills to work there. All the training, all the paperwork, everything. And at the end of the day, the Department of Labor must sign and approve that this specific operator is an competent person to work on this machine, a single machine. And this we have to do in the whole, in all the sites here in South Africa, as one example. You see there in dark black, the explosive manager. The explosive manager has a special role. He handles all topics which are related to explosives. And which is significant, he has a direct link to the Department of Labor, to his counterpart in the Department of Labor. And this is a transparent thing. This is open, transparent. It's like a referee in the own company, where he can bring improvements in. Yeah, we share information. So this is a benefit what we have and an open discussion, right? So he's not reporting daily to me before he's there. He's reporting to the Department of Labor. Now everyone reports directly to the Department of Labor. If you go a little bit lower, it's one example where how deep we are with our legal appointments. The first ADAS, for example, or the SHE, the Safety Health Environment Representatives, must be present in all shifts, in every shift that is working. Yeah, 3 shifts a day, there must be one first ADA, there must be one SHE representative. So everything is really regulated there. To summarize this slide, we have a clear and open line of communication with the Department of Labor. As I stated, any building or process change must be approved by the Department of Labor. I give you one example. Last year, we re-licensed a building where we did something different. And then it's not only the case that the Department of Labor is coming and say, okay, equipment is in place, the tooling is in place, all the safety measures, blast mounts, everything is in place. No. He checks the procedures. He checks the training of the people. Our people, our operators, were physically there. They have a dry run so that the Department of Labor can be convinced, and to be assured that everyone is safe and secure. Yeah? They are speaking with the people. They are speaking with the boots on the ground. Are you feel comfortable? Yeah, can we change something? Can we improve? And so on. So this is a really good 360-degree system we have together with the Department of Labor. Below the Department of Labor and all these regulations, we have a significant point, a part of, I call it paperwork, of policies, of standards, of directives and guidelines, where we as RDM, where we as a company must work through. So that means the system of principle, how we work, the documents with all the requirements, with all the specifications. Official instructions by the management must come to all the people and all the operators. These are directives. And the guidelines at the end of the day, recommended guidelines, so that we have a really, really close net of regulations. Okay, next slide, please. Thank you. When I refer to the regulations, the policies, there's important to understand that we are not alone on the planet. There are many, many more explosives companies worldwide, and there is a network of these explosive companies. And there are three examples. If we talk about other companies, there are other examples. So for our case, we have the so-called SAFEX, an international organization, and the purpose and the goal of this organization is to eliminate the worldwide harmful effects of explosives on people. We count more than 100 companies and organizations worldwide. We are also in these organizations as Rheinmetall Denel Ammunition. And what is interesting is that we sit there with our competitors in the world market. But we have a common understanding that on the topic of safety, yeah, we don't hide anything. So if there is an incident worldwide, this will be shared immediately by law, immediately in these forums, so that everyone can learn and can improve. Yeah, because safety means 24/7 improvement the whole year. Improvement, improvement, and improvement. And this is a good forum where we can measure and we can share information with the international community. The same methodology is for NICST, is the South African National Institute of Explosives and Technology, with 30 members nearly from commercial and arms manufacturing. So also the mining industry, I assume. So and this is on the national thing. We have another group where we can share information for guidelines, principles. This is Rheinmetall with 140, as I said, 140 sites worldwide. And we are part of this global Rheinmetall group. And we can share openly also in the Rheinmetall improvement and information about explosives. So that means all in all, we have a good worldwide network based on international standards that we can share with all the explosives manufacturers worldwide. And all in all, I must say, we will come to this later, we meet here in South Africa, we meet the international standards in production and from procedure-wise and from our products, I must say. So we have international standards here in South Africa. Okay, thank you. Next slide, please. Coming now from the strictly regulated system, based on the OSH Act here on South Africa, based on principles, based on guidelines that I said to you, we come now to our RDM's key principles, because all these rules and regulations will at the end of the day come in these five pillars. And for me, and I'm the CEO since September 19, so for more than 1 year now, these four pillars are essential. Especially the last one. We come to this later. So, I would like to hand over to the COO, Louis Erasmus. He is responsible for this part. And please.
Thank you, Mr. Helmsen. Chair, good afternoon, and the world members of the committee. What you'll see on the slide here, as Mr. Helmsen indicated, is our five key principles. What is fundamentally important is that we have infrastructure, we have buildings, we have equipment that is producing our product, which works with explosives material. We also have people that is working on these equipment and processes. And people, we've targeted specifically our recruitment and training that will cover that element. And if you take the infrastructure and the people and you put them together, you need solid procedures to ensure that they know what they do, how to do it, and to do so safely. And then the biggest important focus for RDM is the leadership. And I'm not here referring to top management. It starts there, and it has to work its way down every level up to the operator level that physically works with the equipment is a leadership function to ensure that we have a safety a culture, and I'll get to that in the next few slides. Next page, please. So if we look at our infrastructure, we have 1,289 buildings across all four sites. Not all buildings are handling explosives. However, the same principles apply regardless whether it's an explosive building or not. The procedures is still applicable and very much important. So our building infrastructure in general is in good condition, and we have routine inspections to assess and to ensure that our safety conditions are maintained at all levels and at all times. What's important also is that our facilities are fit for purpose as well as for our processes. We are unique in what we manufacture. So our on safety-related procedures are done regularly, as I stated on the previous page. All our processes are clearly mapped. We understand the material flow, and that also allows us to make sure that our procedures is kept up to date and accurate at all times. What's also important here is our emergency response procedures is in place and updated as needed. We also do regular exercises to ensure that the people understand what emergency responses is needed and what they need to do in a case of an emergency or an incident. Just related to procedures, we were really faced this year with some challenges in March when we went into lockdown level 5 with the combat of COVID-19. And during that period, the team had to go and look at all our procedures, how we operate, to ensure that when we come back into operations, when we went to level 4, that all our processes are there to assist in the combat the spread of the COVID-19 virus. This also included the use of PPE, as mentioned before, in the explosive environment. We had very strict changes in our procedures and movement of people between plants, and also in the workplace environment, safety distances between operators. We had to do some changes there and update our procedures and also entrench that in our training to make sure that our people are safe, not just from the work, but also from the COVID-19, and I think we were quite successful in doing so. If you look at the amount of infection that we had in our own employees. So accurate, relevant, and up-to-date documentation and procedures are key. If that's not up-to-date and accurate, you are definitely going to make mistakes going forward. So that is important. Safety is critical to safe and efficient production processes, as mentioned before, and any procedures that needs to be updated is an ongoing process. As we learn, as we get new information, we make those changes as needed. Next page, please. The last point is leadership. I think this is by far the most important thing. The crux of this whole slide, and if you read all the information there, is what we call the safety conscience culture. This is how we ensure that every person wakes up in the morning, go to work, go to their workplace, conduct the work that needs to be done without necessarily thinking consciously of what to do with safety, but it comes as a natural way of what I'm doing is safe and what I'm doing in conjunction with my fellow co-workers that we keep safe at all times. So this is really entrenching and forcing that safety conscience culture. We also are proud to say that our people are empowered to stop work immediately to prevent unsafe situations. Even if they have an uneasiness that something might be afoot, they are empowered to say, stop, something's not right, call the supervisor, call the team leader, get management involved, and we make the changes and improvements if need be to ensure that people are safe. Everybody has that responsibility. Everybody has that accountability as part of the culture, of the safety culture. Okay. We drive as part of our protocols. We do Gemba walks. We do plant tasks, task observations. Out of these, we pick up on improvements to be done. It's registered as corrective actions, and the SHE department really drives that hard to ensure that those actions are implemented and captured in our procedures, as well as forming part of the refresher training that is needed.
Again, explain Gemba walks.
Gemba walks is a term that we use here. It's a planned visits by management team, supervisors, plant managers, myself. I also attend these Gemba walks on a different site. It's not just people from a particular plant. It's also the leadership from other plants that join with the safety department that leads this. So it's a group of individuals from leadership that goes to the plant, speaks to the people, look at the processes, and really identify gaps and areas where we can improve in the way that we conduct ourselves in the workplace. Okay. So key is ensuring that the safety culture is installed in new employees and also maintained at all times. And this will forever be an ongoing process to entrench that safety culture in our daily lives. Next slide, please. So in summary, on these five pillars and key principles that I've just went through very briefly, it is part of our daily lives. It's part of what we do. It's part of our planning cycles. It's part of our strategy. Everything we do, all five of those pillars are always evident in our approach. And RDM handles dangerous materials that we know, and we acknowledge that on a daily basis, and has a proven capability to do so certainly safely. And by means of being that, RDM has well-designed and improved infrastructure. And with the adherence to the corrective manufacturing and safety procedures, we can ensure that with thorough training and awareness, people can handle, and we as a business can handle, dangerous materials in a safe manner on a day-to-day basis. Okay. Next slide, please. When it comes to our incident management framework, we are also very much governed by the OHS Act as well as the explosives regulation. What we're allowed to do, what we have to do as part of the requirements. So when there's an incident, we are required to report that, which we do. We're also required to do investigation into the incident in terms of to identify the root cause of that, as well as to establish what learnings we can get from that particular incident. All of these investigations are recorded and kept for 3 years as required, and we also communicate that back to the Department of Labor on conclusion of said inspections or investigations on the findings. Okay. So this is on the left-hand side from the legal requirements. So on the right-hand side are procedural steps within RDM that's captured in our procedures. It's exactly the same as what I just indicated from requirements. We have our procedures and we follow that very diligently. We also have in-house experienced and trained people that can conduct these investigations. We have templates and guidelines that we use to ensure that we are consistent in every investigation. Doesn't matter what type and severity of the incident, we follow that consistently for any type of investigation. Okay. So all our investigation learnings are also shared on the platforms as previously indicated on the network that we have nationally and internationally. And we also share it amongst our sites to ensure that we learn from one another as well. So as a conclusion to that, when required, when there's an incident and there's remedial actions that's needed, the Department of Labor are also closely involved with us to ensure that operations are safe and commence when so needed by the Department of Labor. Okay. So with the conclusion of this, we will go into the incident, but I think this is a good term for what we do in the event of an incident.
Okay. Thanks, Louis. Chair, honorable members, we will now move to the next agenda point that you asked for. It is the incident of 2018 in Somerset West. And as you can imagine, this day in RDM in September, 1st September 2018 has shocked us. It was an extreme situation for all of our employees. And we will now refer to this incident from two angles. The first angle is from an investigation point of view, where we, as Louis Erasmus already has explained, had to follow the procedures based on the OSH Act, based on the Department of Labor, based on every incident that we have, doesn't matter how big or crucial this incident is, it's always the same procedure. And standard procedure on the second angle from Durus Yelitzeli, from our responsibility from ourselves as an employer to our people, our Rheinmetall RDM family, to the families and to our community. These are the next two agenda points. And at least Rod Kaver, the general manager for the development and the leader of the Scott Functional Team, investigation team, please.
Thank you, Mr. Adamson. Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee, and Mr. Sadiq. As Mr. Adamson has said, my name is Rod Kraser. In my normal day job, I am the General Manager for Product Development. But in the context of today's discussion, I led the RDM investigation team following the incident at Somerset West site on 3rd of September 2018. My brief background is I'm a chemical engineer by training. I have more than 33 years of experience in this industry, and I was entrusted to lead the team. The fairly brief overview of the incident, I will quickly introduce you to the site. What are the sites, the operations that happens on this site. I will talk about the summary of the events of the day of the 3rd of September. I will then explain the manufacturing process for the material that is involved, because I think that is relevant to the investigation and to the understanding of the outcome of the investigation. I will introduce the investigation methodology briefly, as well as the teams. And then I will conclude with the outcome of the investigation in terms of the root cause. Thank you. Next slide, please. The Somerset West site, where we are situated at the moment, as you've seen on the previous slide, it's situated in the Western Cape, right on the coast of the False Bay coast, adjacent to the town of Macassar, Strand, and Somerset West. The site is fairly large. It is a very well-established site that has been in operation since the late 1960s, early 1970s. It's 550 hectares of site with almost close to 500 buildings, of which 300, just over 300 are explosive-related buildings. We have about 1,000 people that work on this site, so you can see that it's a fairly big and comprehensive operation. What you will see there on the picture, the photograph on the top, you can see part of the site, and what you will notice is that there's a fairly big distances between the different buildings on the site. There's a lot of empty space. The reason for this is simple. It is to manage the risk if an incident should happen at one of the buildings, that it limits the damage and the spread of that incident to other buildings. And this is not by our design. This is regulated in the explosive regulations in the Act. And depending on the classification of the specific operations that happens at that building, it will be regulated by the regulations in the Act for us in terms of the so-called safety distances or safety circles. So primarily Somerset West site is a propellant manufacturing pyrotechnics and explosive site. You can see the pictures there. We use that materials, propellant, etc., and build that into higher level products such as 40 millimeter ammunition and others. But at its heart, it is a propellant and pyrotechnic site. Next slide, please. I will now move on to the events of the day on the 3rd of September, and it started out as a very, very ordinary day. It was a normal operational day on that Monday at Somerset West. And the explosion occurred at almost 3:30 while an operation of blending clean burning igniter single base propellants was happening at a blending facility and as part of a normal propellant production process. And I'll, in the slide that follow, I will explain this and hopefully that will make a little bit more sense. The specific building was completely destroyed, and unfortunately, 8 of our colleagues lost their lives on that day. There was limited damage to the adjacent buildings, primarily windows that were broken, a little bit of damage to the roof, the roofs of buildings. And this was because, as I've said on the previous slide, because of the prescribed safety distances. So that strategy, it is built into the Act or into the regulations of distance between buildings worked exactly as intended, and thus limiting a spread of the incident to other buildings. Following the incident, the RDM emergency protocol or procedure was activated, and this amongst others leads to this to the establishment of what we call a joint operational committee, which consists of RDM personnel plus outside organizations, amongst others the South African Police Services. This handles the immediate aftermath of the disaster. It was late afternoon, as you can imagine. I should really mention that we received excellent support from all spheres of government on that day and following the days following the incident. These include South African Police Services, the Forensic Services, the National Key Point Regulator, and others. So they were really excellent services or support provided to us. Next slide, please. What I would like to do now is briefly describe how a single base propellant is manufactured. The term single base propellant, and in this case, clean burning igniter single base propellant, refers to the fact that 90% of this material is made up of what we call nitrocellulose. It used to be called, and it is still called, gum cotton in many parts of the world. And the reason for that is that you make this from cotton, the same stuff that you make clothes from. The only difference is we nitrate this, and it then becomes an explosive called nitrocellulose. We received these raw materials as shown there on the sequence of events from numbered 1, 2, 3 and up to 9. We then mix this in a mixer together with other materials, amongst others solvents. We then take this and we put this in a block press in which we press consolidate basically this mixed material into a block of material. The reason for that is that we can put it in an extrusion press, and where we extrude it basically through a die to form small strings of spaghetti-like material, 2-3 millimeters in diameter in this case. These spaghetti strings go through a cutting machine, number 5 on the slide there, which cuts this up into small granules, roughly the same width and diameter as the diameter of the material. We then take this this propellant and we put this into water, warm water. We call that process the steeping process. The reason for that is to remove some of the volatiles and other materials that is used in the mixing process. After that, we put this into ovens where we dry it. And once it is dry, it is put in what is basically a big drum where we add graphite to it. We call that operation a glazing operation. And the reason for that is that you then coat that propellant with graphite, which makes it conductive and which reduces the risk of static electricity. We make these propellants in what we call sublots of, it varies a little bit, but roughly about 100 kilograms at a time, because that is the limit of the mixer. And after each of these sublots has gone through the steps from 1 to 8, we then blend them together in a big drum, basically adding all of the different sublots, and we blend it, and the reason for that is we make it an homogeneous mixture. And the incident happened, as I've indicated on the previous slide, during the blending of operation, so it did of this material. So it did not happen during these manufacturing steps. It actually happened during the subsequent blending. And the final product is indicated there on the right. It's a small powder that's a similar size than the propellants that you will find in small caliber or medium caliber ammunition or bullets. What I should emphasize here is that clean burning igniter single base propellant we are not unique in using this. This is not the first time that we've manufactured this. It has been in more or less continuous production since the 80s here at the South African facilities. in international facilities and companies, it has been in production even earlier than that. And our process, manufacturing process, the safety measures around that are almost exactly the same as that used by other international manufacturers. So it was not a new material, it was not a new process. It is something that has been done many times before. Thank you. Next slide, please. I would now like to describe, on the left hand of that slide, you will see the legal process, what happens. I think it has previously, both Mr. Ellison and Mr. Rasmus has previously referred to our very, very close interaction with the Department of Employment and Labor, and specifically the Inspector of Explosives in that department. But the OSHA Act places a legal responsibility on employers to conduct an investigation following any incident. This is true whether you work with explosives or not. Obviously, the intention of that is to place an obligation on the employer to investigate what went wrong and to learn from that and use that knowledge to improve on the processes or the training or in general to improve the safety of workers. I should also mention that the Department of Employment and Labor, they conduct their own independent investigation. In the event that there's fatalities, there's also investigation by other parts of government, like the South African Police Services and other authorities, because to determine, amongst others, the cause of death. There's an obligation on the employer, in this case RDM, to cooperate fully, which we did. And in terms, we cooperated fully both with the Department of Employment and Labor, obviously, as well as the SAPS, the Forensic Services of the Western Cape, and others. An example of this, for instance, is that in the days following the incident, RDM arranged for, with the permission of the Department of Employment and Labor, and the South African Police Service to take high definition aerial drone footage of the site so that could serve as a record, an immediate record for all parties that were busy with investigations. This information was shared with the South African Police Service as well as the Department of Labor. Obviously, all other information that was required by those authorities were made available as and when required. The investigation team was appointed on the 10th of September, so within the first week, I was appointed to lead that team, and this team consisted of a multidisciplinary team, because we knew right from the start, because of the extent of the damage, that it would be a difficult investigation, and that we would need more expertise that we would require. And therefore, we had two propellant experts, both of them have 30 years of experience and more in this business, a mechanical engineer with an equal amount of experience, safety and health expert, quality expert, and we even brought in one of our retired employees who is an experienced explosive incident investigator and process safety expert. As you can see from the compilation of that team, you can see that it was an extensive, we have extensive experience in propellant and explosive. And where we did not have the enough experience on specific topics, we utilized all international contacts through SAPEX and others, through the Rheinmetall Group, but we also used expertise from outside of RDM to help us in the investigation where required. My team has the authority to investigate all of the circumstances and the facts that led to this incident, and if possible, to identify the root cause of the incident. I should emphasize that I was not given a specific timeline, nor was there any restrictions placed on me in terms of what I could investigate, what information I could access, and more importantly, any limitation on the money required or the investment required to execute the investigation. I think there was a great determination by everybody to to try our best to find the root cause without any limitations of cost and time. This investigation lasted very close to 12 months. We concluded this in October of 2019, and as required by the OSH Act, our investigation report was delivered to the Department of Employment and Labour in October of 2019. Next slide, please. I would now like to go through the results of this investigation. The methodology that we followed, before I get to that, but the methodology that we followed is we accessed information from a very, very wide set of sources. We conducted interviews with both existing employees as well as in some cases previous employees with all management levels. We interrogated all information that we could find on the material, on the processes, etc. So there was no stone left unturned to get as much information as possible. We then formulated what is called a root cause analysis. We followed a methodology that is benchmarked with what best practice internationally is in establishing the cause of such an explosion or incident for that matter, any kind of incident. And we in this case had identified more than 60 potential root causes that could potentially have led to this incident. These root causes were then tested against the available information and evidence, and they were then eliminated. Most of them were eliminated either as being impossible or extremely unlikely. And based on either the information available, engineering analysis, local or international available data, and in many cases experimental results on the materials and processes. The investigation established that during the mandatory routine testing of one of the sublots during the course of the manufacturing process, it was found that one of these sublots did not meet the required quality standards. However, due process was not followed, and instead an attempt was made to rework the material to get it to meet the specification, obviously, and in this process they added extra graphite to the propellant. So the following conclusion was reached, that the most probable immediate cause of the explosion was electricity buildup in a graphite cloud in the blender, and a subsequent discharge that had enough energy to ignite the suspended propellant in the blending drum. This ignited the other propellant, which transitioned into a detonation. I just like to maybe add one or two things to that. You would remember that I said that there's a glazing operation during manufacturing where graphite is added. What happened in this case is there were extra graphite added. The graphite during the blending process, when there were a lot of propellant in that drum, that extra graphite basically formed a cloud or dust cloud of graphite. Like in all operations where materials move relative to each other, static electricity is built up. The normal safety procedures manages that risk, but in this case, because of this extra graphite, that graphite cloud was built up. The static electricity was built up. It eventually led to a spark. And that spark ignited the suspended propellant, which transitioned then into a detonation. I'd like to point out that this specific mechanism and this hazard was a previously unidentified and unforeseen hazard by RDM. And as far as we could establish, it is also an unidentified hazard in the international propellant community. I would like to basically close off by saying that it should be emphasized that we can never with 100% certainty say what happened that day. But I believe that with the available evidence, which was exhaustive investigation, that the above scenario is the most likely cause based on all of the known facts and analysis. Mr. Chair, thank you. That concludes my part of the presentation on the incident investigation the incident that happened on the 3rd of September. So I will hand back to Mr. Erasmus.
Okay, well, thanks, Rod. Chair, honorable members, you see the investigation was concluded like what Taylor stated in October 2019. It was handed over to the DOL. Our legal responsibility. The investigation by the DOL, as far as we know, is ongoing. We are cooperating fully, fully transparent, as we are also doing in our own investigation. In the meantime, we initiated actions after this report based on some improvements and what we picked up in all our five main points. And if you could go please to the next slide. Thanks. You see our five main points, infrastructure, recruitment, training, procedures, and leadership. And these were things that where we were able to improve already now, and please, Louis Erasmus, say some of these things.
Thank you, Mr. Elmsen. With every incident, especially with an incident of this magnitude, one tends to go into overtime to just identify this why and exactly what. So, in parallel with the investigation, we, from ONM side, went, and if I can then refer back to the five key areas, looked at everything again and over and above our normal day-to-day activities of what we do in terms of our inspections and licenses. We went through all the buildings again, make sure that the licenses are fine, in cooperation with the Department of Women and Labor, and all our facilities were deemed fit. And the licenses were appropriated, allocated to the facilities. We also, over and above our approved layouts, where possible, changes were made to the layout design of certain workplaces to ensure that employees are protected. And as far as possible from the area, explosives are being blended, for example, and that the employees are outside of the source of potential danger. We, over and above the normal training, had an intervention program where we went through a complete refresher training on all employees, on all procedures related to safety to our production, to make sure that every employee understands that they have to stay and adhere to procedures at all point of time during the day-to-day activities. Also, over and above our normal procedure reviews, all systems which may impact safety were reviewed to ensure that RM utilizes the best practices to minimize the risk of unintended errors in part of any person or at any time of the process. And then on the leadership, we also, over and above our normal protocols, looked at what can we improve, what can we do additional to strengthen our line managers and supervisors to enforce a safety rules and procedures. And some of these examples I've referred earlier on our PTOs and gamble walks, we strengthened that, we increased the frequency of those as well. So those are just a few things that we've done on these five areas succeeding the day of the accident or the incident.
Okay, thanks. Before I go to the second angle, our social responsibility, what I said, I would like to add on the last point, and this is quite important, and for me, as CEO, the most important thing is the leadership, and Louis Erasmus also stated this, and this is empowerment of people. Empowerment of people so that they can raise a hand, they can say something is wrong, because the people, the boots on the ground, they are working the whole day, 24/7, on their machine. They are the first line of defense. They pick up in the first line if something is wrong.
And this is also part of the leadership to give a voice. Yes. And this is what we call empowerment. This is for us really important. And this is a leadership attitude, which needs to be in every head of the company. Okay, so now we go into the second angle, the social responsibility, and so of the incident, how we our social responsibility to the eight families, to the committee, community, to the community, and to South Africa. And before I do this, Chair and honorable members, I want to say thank you because we had a quite significant support on this day. I was there, but I want to say thank you to our shareholders, to Rheinmetall. So our chairperson, Mr. Papega, came from Germany to South Africa immediately in the same manner like Minister President Gordon. He came immediately to Somerset West together with the chairperson of the Rheinmetall board, this Schlasser. So all the three, the representative of our shareholders, were there immediately in Somerset West, talking with the people, talking with the families, and to be with RDM in this hour. And therefore, I would like to take this opportunity to say thanks for this. This is really important for us as a RDM. So now I want to hand over to Lucia Leseli, the General Manager for HR.
Thank you, CEO, and good afternoon, Chairperson, and honorable members of the committee. My name is Leseli, and I was involved on this day as from the HR perspective. We started to be in touch with the families at 4 o'clock of the day, and we spent all the time with the families until their bodies were removed from the site. And we actually were not just interacting with families, we were actually giving support, ensuring that there is a proper counseling, information sharing, because you know at that time, especially on the day of the incident, it was so critical that families understood exactly what was happening. And we immediately ensured that there was emotional, psychological, and financial support. We had the counselors that were triggered to be on site immediately after the incident. By the time the news were broken to the families, confirming that the eight employees that we could not locate, meaning we were thinking that they are the ones who are affected. At that time, the support was already there. We had support in terms of therapists, in terms of psychologists. We had support in terms of ministers of religion in the area. And we started working with the families, and the journey that we worked with the families as a mourning employer and also mourning families was quite a very intense journey. What we did at that stage, we realized that when you are in our cultures and our communities, you are not planning to have any of this incident, and you will have guests that you did not plan for, because people will come to cry with you, to visit you, family members travel. And then we started at that time to make finances available to assist with the expenses of the mourning period. We assisted with the expenses of the mourning period so that when there were guests, then families were not stranded as to what are we going to give to the guests who are coming to mourn with us. And in that journey, we also made available finances to support families with the individual funeral services. There was no more funeral service. All families were burying in their own style, in their own places. And we had a group of, in fact, our funerals were spread in 3 weeks. We want to understand that some of the families were buried in Eastern Cape. But what was touching in that process, the commitment from top management, is that top management was in all the families of the eight colleagues that were conducted. And we had a collective memorial service. In that collective memorial service, we had families, we had dignitaries, we had the employees, we had community members, and the group that was attending the memorial service was to a tune of more than 7,000 people. What was also important was that this was not only touching to us as the group that was affected in South Africa. This was a global mourn for the whole of Rheinmetall Group, to an extent that there was an initiative from the employees in the whole group to come together and make contribution so that we could give some cash to families over Christmas for their over the Christmas lunch for just their December spend. What happened in that we invited families, they were not expecting anything on this day. They came from for our Christmas lunch. I want the members and everyone to understand that in that dark cloud, when we handed over the checks of 96,326 to each family, you could see some spark of light. And I think at this time, because you know that it's very heavy, and the first Christmas without your loved one is the heaviest. We all have been in areas where we have lost someone. So I think that a gesture was so appreciated by the families at that time. Next slide, please. We actually are fully aware as an employer that when you lose someone who is working, then there's a loss of bread in the family, because someone who's working ensures that there is never a day when the family will sleep without bread or without anything to eat their bread with that night. What happened, we actually worked with Momentum to create a fund that will assist all eight families to ensure that they were taken care of for a period of 10 years. And in addition to that, we actually ensured that the children, and I want us to understand that we have very little children. Some of these colleagues said we had a one-year-old, we had a two-year-old, we had a three-year-old, we had children who were that small. And that fund is also committing to take care of the expenses of these children until they reach the age of 18. And in terms of these funds that were made available, we created a cushion that some of these funds should increase with 6% per annum so that the money manages to meet the inflation needs. And I want to emphasize that these are the funds that are ex gratia. These are not the funds that are pension or COID, which are statutory compensations. So what happened, we made sure that the families, in addition to what was received from the statutory and compensation, which is COID and pension for those other employees, we made sure that everyone is taken care of in terms of our ex-gratia amount that we're putting on the table. We want everyone to know that we remain in contact with families. We also have continuously, up till today, every month we still pay for the invoices of our psychological support that we're giving to our families and also to our staff members. Next slide, please. After a period of a year, we sat and said, what is it that we can do to actually create a memorable event that will never go away for our colleagues? With a consultation of other stakeholders, we came up with the Garden of Remembrance, and that Garden of Remembrance is in the Somerset West Side. It is in a place where families can access without straining to get into the company. So it is an open place where families and employees can go and they can access at any given time. It is a permanent place of refuge, which provides a spot for reflection and meditation, and it is open to everyone who wants to come and sit there in memory of our fallen colleagues. Next slide, please. We actually go beyond the issues of dealing with our employees around incident, but there are other things that we do. Like, for example, when we were attacked by COVID-19, one of the things that the CEO mentioned, which I want to emphasize, is that it happened at the time when our company was also having its own challenges. But we made sure that our employees are fully paid during COVID-19. The month of April, month of May were hard months for us, but all our employees were paid in full, even if they did not come to work. In addition to that, during COVID, we came up with the other interventions. One other intervention that is a great intervention that we came up with was that of sanitizer. I want us to remember that at the time when the COVID came and we were told that we are going on lockdown, there was no sanitizer in on the shelves. We need to remember that. We came as a proactive employer and created a forum where we started producing hand sanitizer. And we are doing that in cooperation with our local partner. And the business started during the lockdown to respond to this need that was not only locally impacting, but was internationally impacting as well. We received numerous requests from foreign security forces to support them with the sanitizer. And we also want you to understand that we are confident that we can also supply the local demands that are imposed by COVID-19. One of the initiatives that we did during this time, I wanted to look at the slide. The slide, that picture that you are seeing is the picture of SANDF when they came to collect the 6,000 liter of hand sanitizer that we provided to them during a lockdown of level 5. So it was the time when we all knew our soldiers are supposed to be in the field. They were supposed to assist with COVID-19 combat. And at that time, we have decided that as the company, we want to assist and support so that they are safe as they continue to do that. And we are still continuing to provide them with the sanitizer. We actually made sure that we make our resources available to the Western Cape Disaster Management Team by indicating that we are offering a building storage for storage of a COVID-related material that was registered, that we could provide that assistance. And with our communities around, because we could see that people were struggling, there was a lot of fear, we then decided to come up with parcels of 2,000 for the community around us, Fairgrove and Makassar, to give to the households. And those parcels, if you look at the picture above, you will see those green things are plastic bags that were prepared as parcels for the families around our area. And they were given, the parcel had a 500 milliliter hand sanitizer, tissues, and soap, and they were given to 2,000 families. We also made our clinics available to assist, and we recorded that as well in the Western Cape Disaster Management, that we would like to extend our assistance to the community in the combat of COVID-19. And we actually did everything possible to push back the spread of COVID-19 in South Africa. And not only in South Africa, but as a group, Rheinmetall Group, in all our 140 sites where we are situated, we've been assisting with the supply of the PPE, including the sanitizer, and that would also include the masks. So we are not only doing this locally, but we are also doing it internationally. That our sanitizer, which was coming from South Africa Development, we managed to actually assist with 2,000 liters of sanitizer to the German Armed Forces. 2,000 million sanitizer to the German Armed Forces. And we actually also had mobile clinics that were assisting to the field so that this continues to assist in the combat of COVID-19. Next slide, please. Going beyond COVID-19,
As you are moving towards concluding, just try and summarize. At least by 2 o'clock, I allow members to engage on the report.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I'm finishing. It is very important that we understand that we are not only responding to issues around the community. We go beyond that. We have projects that we started. We have a school that we adopted in KZN, Sonyongwana High School, where we equipped the school with a chemistry, computer, and physics laboratories. And we bought 920 bicycles for students who were walking distances, some of about 5 to 8 kilometers a day. And we established a borehole and upgraded the ablution facilities of that school. The school is in deep rural area with flushing toilets. This is very exciting. And want you to understand that the increase with what we have put in the school, in the infrastructure, the increase in terms of the performance was so visible that the school moved from 41% in terms of their matric results. They are now sitting at 93%. And we are continuously, up to today, paying the salaries of the math and science teacher, the two security personnel, and the ablution maintenance lady. The medical economic development that we are seeing, we are an empowering company. These are black companies that started in response to broad-based black economic empowerment. And some of these companies have been in existence for a period of 10 years, and we continue to build them. The others are about 4 to 5 years old. And that is gardening, car wash, cleaning, internal transport services, which we need to mention that this is a significant business with a lot of vehicles that has been given to a military veteran company which had no experience. We had to trust and build and develop this company so that it can continue to give us service. And the other place that we want to highlight is the daycare center, which was planned about 5 years ago. And it is a daycare center that is the state of the art. It is a brand new infrastructure that we have built with a tune of more than 10 million rand. And it has created space to accommodate 160 kids in the community. And that is between 6 months and 6 years old, created 24 jobs. The jobs would be principal, deputy principal, teaching staff, accountant, teachers. And it is the safe and affordable state of the art facility. And I think my last slide will be talking on the next slide, you see. We'll be talking on the triple BEE. We are actually not just a compliant company. We are very passionate about our transformation. This is the certificate that we got this year, June 2020. And we are a level 3, the second level 3 certificate that we have. We're so passionate about our transformation. We work with our money. We ensure that we don't only comply, but we go beyond the expectations, and we actually exceed the expectations around transformation. If you look at that green bar, we have actually spent in 2019 alone, around the triple BEE, we've spent 1.4 billion rands. So we are actually empowering. We are passionate about transformation. We are passionate about our employees, our suppliers. We are passionate about our community. And we are pro-transformation as a company. I want to hand over back to the CEO. Thank you.
If you can go to the last slide, I think we can skip to the next slide. We already said that we have a couple of questions. The last thing I want to conclude is I started the presentation that we are not a normal company because we handle explosives, we handle ammunition, and you see our customer is there in front. And our customer is always not a normal guy where we sell Coca-Cola, now we sell ammunition. And our customers are soldiers, a young man and a woman in the field. And therefore, we as a company in general have a have a responsibility, a federal responsibility, and this is how we see our business, our core business, in a partnership with our customers, our partners, to be transparent, based on trust, and to have a reliability in our manufacturing and product. And the same, yeah, you can transfer also to safety. What we want to do is we want to empower our people, because I think we have a good infrastructure in place and control system of all the regulations which are in place. Recruitment and training is on behalf. Procedures are getting monitored, so we have a good system. And on the leadership level, this is what we have to do as a company, also together with the DOL, but where we see our focus. And you can call it like our customer language. Yeah, it's mission command. Yeah, we call it empowerment. This is the most important thing. Yeah, Chairperson and honorable members and Talib, this concludes our presentation. Hope we are just in time for 2 o'clock. And we are available now for questions.
Thank you very much, CEO. And thanks for the presentation. You can remove the presentation, Loli. Thank you very much. We are now going to allow honorable members, you'll understand that because of the sensitivity of this matter, I just allowed them to to explain. You know, I'm not very patient in terms of very long presentation, but because of the sensitivity of this matter, I just said we need to give them time to speak to issues. I'm going to allow members to speak in this order. Honorable Bibi will be the first, and then Honorable Nana, Honorable Arnold, Honorable Klute, Honorable Ngwenya, and then lastly, Honorable Modise. Honorable Bibi, you can start.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thanks very much from the organization led by the CEO. It shows that they do really apply the teamwork, because he could allow everyone to say his part. And it is very detailed, of which thanks to you, Chairperson, to allow them, so that really we would understand what went wrong, I mean, in all aspects. And also we should thank the way they communicate with the communities in surroundings, of which really we applaud you for so doing. And also I was about to ask about the KZN, but thanks, you have covered me. At least you have adopted one of the schools in KZN, of which really you are doing the job, I mean, in all spheres of our government. Chairperson, I've only got two questions. The first one will be, since this tragic accident was due to a technical fault, what practical measures you as an employer have put in place so as to ensure that a similar incident does not happen again in future? And the second one, Chairperson, will be, can you tell us, CEO, what role unions played following this incident in terms of ensuring safe working conditions for workers, and whether they are satisfied with the measures put in place or not? Thank you, Chairperson. Those are my two questions.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bibi. Honorable Nana.
Well, thanks, Chairman, and I would really want to commend DINEL for such a comprehensive presentation, and it's not something that I do quite often, share you as you will know, but I think it has really been a lot more detailed presentation, and
I do understand that the brief that they were given for today's meeting was really around the unfortunate incident that took place in their Somerset West plant. But you will know, Chair, it's quite difficult not to ask some of these questions, even if they don't form part of the original brief. I'm really pleased that Dinelle has gone to greater length in accommodating families of victims of the deadly fire. It would be interesting to hear, Chair, from unions. I'm not for a moment second guessing what Dinelle has just told us, but it would be interesting to get another opinion from the unions, whether they can you know reaffirm and confirm all the good things that we've just been told. Chair, as you will know, that we are from provinces, and Dinelle's footprint is largely in three provinces, if I'm correct, if not two, in three, if I'm not mistaken, which will be Western Cape, Gauteng, and where is Potchefstroom? And also in Poch. I wanted to check in terms of their expansion strategy. Are there plans to expand the business to other provinces, probably in a form of, you know, opening up new plants in other provinces for job creation? The second question, Chair, and please forgive me, Dinelle, for asking questions which are really outside of your brief. The second question, Chair, is on the African market. How far has Dinelle gone into Africa? I know the CEO did mention that one of their key elements to their success is the export market. How far have they gone into the African continent? And how much of their ammunition has been sent to tyrants such as the president of Zimbabwe, Mnangagwa? And how much of their ammunition has probably been used in killing Nigerians in the last few weeks? I will pause at that, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Arnold.
Thank you, Chairperson. And also thank you for the now for the presentation. It was a long presentation. And I think the brief that we have requested was also only for the incident that happened where 8 workers lost their life in the explosion in Somerset West. But be it as it may, let me say that I think, Chairperson, when you do your own investigation, the outcome of your own investigation will always be in your favor. That's how it works. And now is coming here with the security team to convince us that everything was in order in terms of their safety responsibility for the workers that has died in that disaster. But the other thing is, when the incident happened that time, the community of Makassar, where the company is, requested them to come and explain to the community in terms of accountability. I know for a fact they have only come maybe once or didn't come in terms of their responsibility to account for what happened in the community. I was also there that time when the incident happened. I went to the company. But let me say that in terms of the response from the company, it was not good at all. There were slow responses in terms of not coming to attend those meetings where they need to come and engage with the community. Then the other thing that I want to raise here, are they saying now that they have done enough for those families? Because they've mentioned here about momentum and it's a 10-year investment, a monthly contribution and what they have done, Christmas lunch and everything like that. But I'm asking here, are you saying that you have done enough in terms of those workers that lost their lives in your company, that you are saying that those workers, you said in your own presentation that the workers was fully trained, including the supervisor and those that was at that time there, they were fully trained. So was there something wrong with your training, or what was the case here? Chairperson, this is what they are saying in their own presentation, that all the members were fully trained, including the team leader and the supervisor, both had extensive experience with the material and operations at the time of the incident. So why absolving yourself then from the incident that happened? Then the other thing that I want to find out now in terms of the investigation, because I know there must be consequences, and we need to see what the outcome is of the consequences. Because if you or myself get into an accident with someone, or someone get killed, then it means that I will be prosecuted for that. So we need to follow on this matter, because I think for the families also to get closer in terms of the what happened really there, because they say they can't say 100%. So it means now that the families are still out there wondering what really happened in terms of the incident that happened. Chairperson, let me conclude there, and then maybe if there is follow-ups after the reply, then I will have a follow-up on that. Thanks.
Honorable Plute.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I've got quite a few questions. I'll try not to make many statements and just get right to the questions. I think we should just differentiate between Denel, Rheinmetall Denel Munitions, and Rheinmetall Defense Group. These are basically three different companies that comes together in the middle, Rheinmetall Denel Munitions. So my question to the CEO, Helmsen, und Welkomen, and that's the extent of my German. CEO, my question would be, if you have a look at the track record of Rheinmetall Defense Group, have you ever experienced an accident at any of your other units elsewhere in the world, such as we saw at Somerset West? That's the one question. The other question is, I want to speak about your partnership with Denel, which is the first company. We know Denel is in a weak financial position. It's basically and technically insolvent, sometimes unable to pay salaries, unable to raise working capital, losing highly skilled engineers. The equity injection is not enough, and we know about job cuts at Janelle now. So my question to you, CEO, as a professional, are you concerned about your partnership with Janelle, especially when we have a look at this regarding safety and the financial position of Janelle? Also, with what we know about Janelle's finances, how did you then manage such good finances? Because you showed it at the start of your presentation, considering that we have had a COVID-19 year and Janelle's position. So that's the question on that side. My other question is regarding the finding or what was said about the accident itself. So there was a component in the propellant mixing process that did not meet the required quality standards. Apparently, workers tried to compensate for this by adding extra graphite to the propellant mixture. I would like to know, what would the standing operating procedures be in your company regarding this? Would you have picked it up and would you have said, no, you can't do this because this is dangerous? Or what was the advice given, especially to workers there? I will also like to know, maybe it's a question to the CEO, as a professional, have you identified any shortcomings or deficits or defects actually in South African legislation to maybe ensure that this does not happen again? So I'm speaking about what we can do in future. And do you think there is regulatory and legislative changes we can make to maybe change this? And then lastly, there is two perceptions I would like to give Rheinmetall the opportunity to respond to. The one is that your company seemed unprepared to take responsibility for the disaster. Now, what I've seen from the HR department, in my mind, that's not true, but I would like to give you an opportunity to respond to that. And also, community members say putting a factory of that magnitude in the middle of a community puts their lives at risk and requires an investigation into water and air quality. My question is, was it put there whilst the community was there, or did the community develop next to it? So I would like to know which one came first, because that actually plays a role as well. So those are my questions. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Clute. Honorable Kenya.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Chairperson, I've got possible questions. I want you to check that whether there has been any similar incident in the past year which may have occurred similar to the September 2018 incident. And if yes, what are the details of such incident? If no, is this the first incident of its kind to have happened in RDM operations? I also wanted to know that are there any prevention safety measure which have been done after the September 2018 incident to avoid the similar incident from happening in RDM operations across the country? If yes, can we get more information? Chair, also I wanted to check with the CEO that can you provide more information as to what do you mean when you said RDM has received excellent support from all spheres of government? The fourth question, Chair, in terms of the support families. Chairperson, we appreciate what is happening, Chairperson. But Chair, I've got question on in terms of the support of the families. I can see on page 24, in terms of the supporting of the families, that there is a good job that they've done. But Chair, I think that is not enough. Hence, I'm asking this question. I wanted to check the Chairperson that are there any possible to employ family members of the disease or RDM operation across the country? If no, why not? The last question, last and not least, Chair, I wanted to check, are there any efforts to assist the children of the disease with financial support in order to further their studies at the university or at the any charity institution? If no, why not? Because what they are saying on their presentation is not enough to say they do have the school, they do have the daycare. So my question is on the university. When the child goes to the university, are their children getting support in terms of that? Thanks very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ngwenya. Honorable Modise.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good afternoon to honorable members and to the team that are representing today. Chairperson, I have two questions. I just want to check with CEO. They do have a plant in the West, Kopoch, at Potchefstroom. But when they mention about the community development, I didn't hear them mentioning to help the community of the Northwest, particularly in the rural area. They didn't mention anything about the community of Northwest. Second question, Chairperson. She mentioned that they have invested in the
I can't hear you, Honorable Modise. Is it from my side or I don't know. But I can't hear you. You can switch off your video. We can't hear you, Honorable Modise. You can switch off your video so that you can save the network. Honorable Modise is still there. She seemed to have left. She has bushired. thank you very much. She will come back. thank you very much. CEO, can you quickly deal with the issues as raised by members? You must know that we don't have a lot of time. Just briefly, brief answers so that we can allow members to do follow-ups if they do have any opportunity to make follow-ups. CEO?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members, thank you for your question. You highlighted several times teamwork. I appreciate that this message came through you, that we are acting like a team because safety is like a team. So thanks for this. The first question was...
Chair?
Honorable Modise, are you back?
Yes, I'm back, Chairperson.
I thought you had bushired.
I'm bushired in a serious. Because all along I was listening to the presentation, but when it comes to my questions, I'm going nowhere. Chairperson, did you hear my first question?
Yes, that they did not touch anything in terms of purchase through, in terms of community development. Yeah.
Particularly in the rural area.
Yes, we got it.
Okay, the second question here was, they mentioned that they have invested in youth. I welcome that because youth are the leader of tomorrow, which is good. But I just want to check, are they invested only in youth? What about women? Because they must invest in women, because women are the core of the nation. That question, Chairperson, is how many or did they have the unions in their Somerset plant? And then how many union representing workers at Somerset that are recognized? And how many that are not recognized in the Somerset? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much for Chair? Coming back. Thank you very much.
Chair?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Honorable Mbise?
Hello?
We can hear you.
Sure.
Okay. CEO?
Hello, Mama. Thank you for the question. So I start with the first one, the question of improvement. I think as we said, improvement is the core of safety and is an ongoing methodology, is an ongoing task. Day by day, month by month, week by week, every day we live from improvement. And we will improve also in the next days, years, and decades. We showed the improvements on slide number 9 on our 5 bullets. I will refer to this on infrastructure, on recruitment, on training, procedures, and leadership. I give you one example in infrastructure. We built up a new plant. We will invest nearly 100 million rand. This will be a fully automatic plant where we have no operator in the loop. This is a new improvement that we have where we invest, for example. Recruitment, training, I think we covered everything with our refresher trainings that we have established immediately. Then I go to the procedures, because procedures are important. But they mean nothing if they are just a piece of paper. And what is important for me is that we follow, and for us all, sorry, not only for me, for the whole RDM team, is that we follow these procedures daily, hourly, and that we apply the general safety rules in our workplace also daily, hourly, weekly. But therefore, the RDM's management and the leadership team as well, and you saw it in our presentation, is completely committed to ensure that a safety first culture is adopted by all who work here. That means leadership. And leadership means responsibility by line manager function. And line manager function is not only me, it's not only the CEO, it's not only the general manager, it's the plant manager, it's the shift leader, it's everyone in this parameter or hierarchy. So and this is the main task what I see, to bring in the heads of all our people this empowerment and this knowledge, so that we can live the procedures. Because as I said, and I repeat myself, procedures are important, but they are nothing if we don't follow them. And therefore, the first step, everyone must be aware about procedures. Yeah, by law, these are as we stated, relating to the OSH Act. Number one, we can make it really clear. We copy these things and print it out. The second thing is, all our people must understand the procedure, what is written down. This is training. And the third thing is daily life. We must educate everyone to follow the procedure. And this is important. And I heard a lot of things of young people, but it's also the, I don't say old people, I say experienced people who are working here for 30 years and who say, ah, look, 20 years, I did it in this way, in this way, I don't follow the procedure. This is important, is that we all follow the procedures. Procedures are sometimes uncomfortable, yeah, because I think maybe I can have a fast track, but important for us is that we follow all the procedures, because then our work is safe. You asked for the role of the unions. I answered some questions. We have in total 6 unions here in RDM. And what I experienced in the last year, and I live this as a CEO, I have a transparent relationship to the unions with Dudu Zileseli in charge from an HR perspective. And I want to have this transparent relationship to the unions, because our employees are our common employees. And we both, from an employer side and from the union side, we must fight, therefore, that we empower our employees, that we give them food, we give them money, yeah, we give them work. So therefore, we need contracts, and this is the most important thing. And this is not that we have the unions on the other on one side and the employer on the other side. We live, and I think we can be proud about this, in a transparent group and teamwork with the unions. Dudu, you want to add something?
Yeah, I think through the incident, we worked with all our 6 unions. Our unions are Solidarity, NUMSA, SEPAU, SACU, CHIWUSA, and with all these unions, we actually worked together around the accidents, and in all our labor forums, we were reporting continuously on the incident until we reported on the investigation results. Even on the day when the results were going to be given to the company, to the employees in October, the unions were present in terms of the union officials, not only our shop stewards, because we've been working with them and reporting to them continuously and consistently. What is also very important to mention is that COSATU, the Western Cape office of COSATU, continued to follow up on the issue even after the incident, and that continuation in terms of information sharing was closed properly with them as well. So I would say the unions were informed, the unions were involved, including the improvements that we are doing in terms of the security and safety in our premises. There is also that reporting forum where we deal with the unions on a continuous basis during our labor forums. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Guru. The next question was related to our to expand our business. I think in the current situation and the positive market environment, we will expand our business from our customer base, so that we will produce more in the next years here in South Africa. This is for sure. So we will have a growth in turnover. If we will expand in South Africa, I can state really clear, it depends. So we have no plan at the moment, but this decision will be made by the management of RDM and the director, so the board of RDM. And as I said from the beginning, our board is business driven. If this makes sense from a business perspective, we will expand. If there are good business opportunities, business ideas, we are always open to expand, because we want to grow and we want to have more market share. This is from this topic. The question related to the export, especially to Africa. As I stated at the beginning, South Africa, and Africa is a small portion of our annual sales. 90% is outside this continent. Yeah. So that means 10% of our annual sales are in Africa. 90% are outside Europe, Middle East, Asia, United States, America, sorry. So in Africa, we don't decide with which country we make business. The decision is made by the NCACC, because the government gives us approval with which country we can make business. Because we don't sell Coca-Cola, we sell weapons, and this is a strictly regulated environment. And therefore, I can say we don't sell in embargo countries based on the UN, and we don't sell in any countries where the NCACC has not approved a permit. So this is Africa. Then coming back to the investigation, honorable member Arnold, I think. Sorry, I could only pick up the first name on the screen. So you related to the investigation team. Some of your information I have not found in our presentation here. So that you had, it's not in our presentation. As I said from the beginning, the investigation team, and you can clearly ask how independent is the investigation team from a company. Yeah, this is clear. We follow the procedures based on the OSH Act. So we are we have the obligation to make an in investigation. This was cross-functional, and yeah, I can give you more than my word. I was not here, but I was here. I can give you more than my word that we as RDM, yeah, are mostly interested in the outcome in the investigation, and with the finalization of this investigation, this report was handed over to the Department of Labor together with other reports from the police, and that means that we now have to work that wait that the National Prosecuting Authority will look at all the available information and findings and determining the next steps. And we will stay, as I said before, we will be transparent, sharing everything as we shared before. And this is to the investigation. There were questions to Denel and Rheinmetall. One question referring to Rheinmetall, if there was an incident like this before. I'm not aware about this, but I will ask the shareholder Rheinmetall. I can only speak for RDM, but I will ask the shareholder Rheinmetall and will come back with a question, with the answer, sorry, if this is okay for you. The same thing, Denel. I can't answer the question of the financial situation of Denel, but I mean, Mr. Talib Sadiq is in. You maybe Talib can ask this later on to this point. Deficit. Yeah, I think I answered it. There was a question: have you picked up deficit, and how can we improve? We improve in a permanent basis. This is the nature of our safety. So what was the next question? I'm not sure, I can't read my own writing. I come to this later. The question was if there was a similar incident in the past, like the incident in September. I can say no. There was no incident like this. And give you an expression about other incidents. So we monitor this on a monthly basis and give you one figure I have here. If we take the disabling injuries we have, we measure this from month to month and year to year. We had in 2019 in total 6 disabling injuries. It means people can't go to work, so car crashes or some other topic. In 2020 until now we had 1. The industry benchmark is 14. So I would say we are under the benchmark. And we improve from year to year and getting better and better from this side. The question regarding the support of the government during the after the incident, I can say that we and RDM received excellent support from all spheres of the government following the incident. I think we received a lot of support from the city of Cape Town, the fire and rescue services, the disaster management, the national key point regulator. As you are aware, all our sites are national key points. So there was also a good support from their side, from the Minister of Public Enterprise and Denel. And as I said, the most important thing was, I think, the commitment from Preben Gordon, Minister Preben Gordon, and the chairperson of Denel, Monschlaschler, and Mr. Papberger, from the chairperson from Rheinmetall, to the RDM, and to come, even if the times are not good after the incident. I think this was a great commitment and the most important thing. There were some questions about supporting of the Potchefstroom community, of supporting children, and if they are getting older, so a university, what we do. But I would like to hand over to Dudu to refer to these topics, please.
Okay. I think I would like to start with the support of the children of the families affected by the accident, to say what are we planning to do for the tertiary. We have an open bursary at RDM where the first call of first point of call is for the children of the employees. So the children of the deceased will actually be covered in terms of that policy around their tertiary education. There wouldn't be any reason for us to give people that we have not interacted with, we have not worked for us, bursaries, and fail to give the bursaries of those that worked with us. So our commitment is there. And in terms of the support that we are doing around the Potchefstroom community, I would say the same model of the crèche that we have developed for the Makassar area is the same model that is being in the pipeline for the Potchefstroom site. The employees at Potchefstroom are fully aware of that. It has been marketed to them as well, so that they know that whatever we're doing in this community is going to be extended to that site as well, because it is one of the bigger plans that we have. But in the meantime, we have some small organizations that we work with, like crèches that we work with in the area of Potchefstroom, where we are actually annually assisting them. We couldn't do it this year because of COVID-19, but we normally have an event which is driven by our finance department, where they are invited on site and they are taken care of, and all of them, they come, including the orphanage that we work with in on that site. The issue of women in our program, I think it should please the member who asked this question to know that out of the 10 companies that we started from about 10 years ago, 6 of those companies are women-owned, black women-owned companies that we have started and supported. So we would like to say we have the interest of women at heart. We have programs that were driven specifically to ensure that the black women are empowered in terms of their economic activities. We have started 10 companies, and 10 of those, 6 of them are black women-owned companies. So we are involved in the issue of empowering women. And to also say, in terms of our bursaries, we are also encouraging, in terms of the proportionate, of ensuring that we have women in our bursary stream, because we know that these are women that are going to assist in the transformation spheres when we get to the place of implementing employment equity. And I think I've covered, Chairperson. See you.
Thanks, Suru. I would like to cover the questions regarding our environment and our community. So the question was, how is RDM making sure that our communities around are safe. And the one question was, what was earlier founded, Makassar or Somerset West? I'm not a historic expert, but in the past, I heard from the experienced guy next to me that the site was here first, and then the community was built up more and more in the last 20 years. And maybe Rod is more experienced because he lives here in Somerset West for many, many decades, who can answer this.
Yeah. the community of Makassar is a very, very old one, which dates from the Dutch East India area. So you could technically say they were here first, the community of Makassar. But this site was established right next to what used to be the AECI dynamite factory, which was established more than 100 years ago. This is the reason why the site was established here, because they shared certain facilities. At that time, there was no towns around it. So this facility, although the community of Makassar, there already was a community, as I understand it from a long, long time ago, when this plant was built here, just like the dynamite factory next door, just like the Marathon-themed dynamite factory in Gauteng, they were built far away from built-up areas for exactly that reason. But over time, obviously, as urbanization happened and the towns expanded, the towns grew closer and closer to the facility. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Rod. And general speaking, and I think this is the most important thing, all our sites, and the question was especially to the Somerset West side, we present absolutely no risk to the surrounding area, especially to the township of Dupries or Makassar and the communities and the site itself is safe. We can say this because we comply with all required legislations and we are getting audited and tested by third parties, including the government entities, such as the Department of Employment and Labor and the Department of Environmental Affairs. And I think we are compliant to all these requirements, answer the regulation. The answering of, there was one question, and I want to add what Duru said, to our accountability to the community of Makassar. We have one clear statement, and Duru referred to this family first. And this was related to the whole process of the report. And last year in October in 2019, was my first year, first month as CEO, we decided that we inform first the families of the dedicated colleagues. So the family were informed first from us, from the management, from myself, here in Somerset West. After this, we informed our people, our employees here in Somerset West directly, face to face, so that everyone is aware about what happens in the same manner what you heard today. It's the same transparency, what we have to you, and that we have our employees, full transparency. The third thing was that we informed all our employees in the upper side, as well as our shareholders, Rheinmetall and Denel. And latest, we sent the report to the DOL. So we talk about hours. This all happened in one day, but I think it's important that we refer to this. Thank you. I can't read one question on my notes, so I missed minimum one question. Sorry, Chair.
No. Thank you very much. I think what we'll do, the secretariat will just check all the questions that you might not have answered, because I remember there was one on the consequences management issues and some few others. They will send them to you so that you put the answers in writing back to us. Any other questions that you might have left, we can do that. I'll just check from the department side if the DDG wants to say something. I can give you 2-3 minutes to say something.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon to you, the honourable members, and the Rheinmetall team and the Denel team. Thank you very much. Actually, when we started the relationship with Rheinmetall, the aim was to grow the business to be really an export-led business, which I think we have achieved that. I think the incident is one black mark in this relationship. We have worked with Rheinmetall, as the CEO has mentioned, that the minister, he flew from I think it was in Japan or China, just to be with the Rheinmetall community in the surrounding community in the Western Cape. So the investigations, yes, Rheinmetall has done theirs. Actually, we are also awaiting the formal one from the Department of Labor so that we are really clear of what lessons to take forward on this and even accountabilities. I think I had the members want to find or to see consequence management on this matter. Perhaps the report from the Department of Labor will be as authoritative to lead us in that direction. But the Rheinmetall one, I think it was very necessary for them to do it, because you can't have an incident in your yard and then you're still waiting for someone to conclude. You must have your own preliminary understanding of what might have happened, and maybe it will help you to prevent others that may happen in the near future. So it's also a continuous effort to improve operations going forward, so that people are safe in that space. So, Chair, we will follow up on the issue of questions that need to be replied back to the committee, and we'll make sure that any further follow-ups we are able to respond back to the committee. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, DDG. I think we need to thank the CEO together with yourself, DDG, and the team from the Department of Public Enterprise, the CEO and the team from RDM. We really want to thank you for coming to make a very comprehensive presentation. Like we said, the Secretariat will look at other questions that were not answered, and then you put them in writing. From our side, we can release the CEO and the team so that we can deal with our own logistical arrangements as the committee in your absence, CEO.
All right. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Please. Thank you very much. Loli, do we have any other internal arrangements to deal with?
Yes, Chairperson, we have minutes.
Okay.
The last time's minutes. They sent them to members last week. I'm gonna put them on the screen now.
No, you don't have to waste time by putting. If you have sent to members, it means
I did.
We'll just ask members if there are any corrections on the minutes
of the 4th of November.
Yeah, of the 4th of November. It seems there is none. Can we get a member who moves for the adoption of the minutes?
Adoption for the minutes, Chairperson.
Honorable Mudise moves for the adoption. And Honorable Bibi.
A second, Chairperson.
What do you say it in Zulu? How do you say it?
Yes, sir. That's sad.
Honorable Bibi, second the minutes. Thank you very much. Is there any other thing, Loli, from your side?
No, Chairperson, thank you.
Chairperson, Honorable Kruter, just a question. Honorable Almost asked me to ask you, when are we going to Indonesia now?
You are saying what? I didn't hear you.
Honorable Arnold asked me to ask you, when are we going to Indonesia for our international trip?
Oh, the international trip.
Yes. But we're not taking any pastors along, okay?
Where we were supposed to go.
No. No.
I know the Arnold can
even. You mustn't say it, girl.
He said I should ask you.
No.
No, we'll look into it, the issue of international trip. Now that we are in. Thank you very much, honorable members. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, James. Thank you, James.
Thank you.
So, my leadership.
Thank you.
So, thank you so much. Okay.